It's a summer morning in 1963. The sun is rising over the leafy Milwaukee suburb of Elm Grove, where everyone is fast asleep. That includes William H. Davidson, the 60-year-old president of Harley-Davidson Motorcycles, slumbering next to his wife, Ruth. Like everybody, she calls him Bill. And Bill is dreaming. He's dreaming of a magical place where the only kind of motorcycle is Harley-Davidson. The satisfying rumble of well-tuned Harley engines fills the air. All the riders are clean-cut, well-dressed people who smile and wave as they glide by. There are no competing bikes from England. There are no cars to lure riders away. There are no savage, low-life bike gangs tarnishing the Harley name. And most of all, there's no such thing as Honda. It's perfect. It's heaven. Then it's 5:01 and his clock radio goes off.
Good Lord.
Bill, what's all the commotion?
Oh, nothing, honey. Just had a wonderful dream interrupted by my worst nightmare.
The Honda commercial?
Yeah, the Honda commercial.
Honda is kicking Harley's butt. The Japanese company established American headquarters in 1960, and by 63, they have over 500 dealerships and are selling more than all other bike makers combined. They'll move 100,000 machines this year alone. As Harley clings to a paltry 6% of the market share, Honda's lightweight, efficient, maintenance-free bikes have captured young mainstream consumers, and according to the jingle, these are the nicest people. That leaves Harley with the meanest people. Harley-Davidson is the ride of choice for outlaw bikers. And they don't just ride them. They chop them. They mutilate them. They mangle them.
Not only is Honda killing our sales, this ad's rubbing the bike gang crap in my face. First, Triumph steals our buyers. Now it's Honda. And last time I checked, we won a war against Japan.
I know, honey. I'll go make you some eggs. Since the Indian Motorcycle Company went under in 1953, Harley-Davidson has been the sole surviving maker of bikes in the United States. But it's the bikes being imported into the United States that are the problem. A very big problem.
If you travel, you know when it comes to love.
See you soon.
Can't wait.
The sky is no limit. You know with your Delta Amex card, being oceans apart means meeting in Aruba. And booking a war travel with your card means saving 15% on Delta flights. You know kissing under the bridge of sighs guarantees eternal love. Because you're the long-distance lovebirds. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Take off 15, discount not applicable to partner operated flights or taxes and fees. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know.
You know, Audible has a brand new collection of exclusive thrillers. Every move is made more exciting by captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances. I just downloaded The Grand Opening by Carl Weber. It's a mystery about a family business in a small southern town, and there are secrets around every turn. You know, when I'm listening, the time just disappears, getting completely immersed in the story and the performances. And as an Audible member, you get to keep one title a month from their entire catalog, including bestsellers and new releases. So come on, listen along. New members can try Audible now free for 30 days. Head on over to audible.com/BW or just text BW to 500-500. That's audible.com/BW or text BW to 500-500 to try Audible free for 30 days.
From Wondery, I'm David Brown, and this is Business Wars.
Thank you.
Bill Davidson has eradicated domestic consumption only to be hit by a wave of popular imports. First came Triumph and BSA. Now, Japanese brands like Yamaha, Suzuki, and Kawasaki have entered the picture. But the hands-down favorite is Honda, the choice of all the nice people. As for Harley, well, it's the pick of the Hell's Angels. And they're not nice people. Honda seems unstoppable, and it'll change the image of American motorcycling and American motorcyclists completely. This is episode 4 of Harley and the Biker Wars. Japan takes no prisoners. It's hard to imagine that the multi-billion dollar Japanese company sprouted from a humble moped created by Soichiro Honda. Honda comes from a small village called Komyo, where his father is a blacksmith. His family is poor. He's one of 9 children. 4 of them will die young, stricken with disease. In 1913, when Honda is barely 7 years old, the Harley-Davidson factory is in full swing, turning out a Silent Gray Fellow model every 7 minutes. But in Komyo, 6,000 miles from Milwaukee, the young Honda boy has a life-changing experience. He sees his first car. It is a profound, almost sacred moment. As he'll describe it years later, "Forgetting about everything else, I went running after the car. I caught up with it and hung on to its rear. I was deeply stirred. When the car stopped, oil dripped down to the ground under it. I was literally intoxicated by the smell of that oil. I put my nose down to the ground and took deep breaths of the smell. I must have looked like a dog. Then I rubbed it over my hands and arms. I think it was from that moment that the idea originated that I would one day build a car myself." Soichiro Honda's path is set. His formal education stops as a teenager, but when it comes to anything mechanical, anything with an engine, he's brilliant. He's a visionary who believes that if the quality is there, success will come. After World War II, Japan is devastated. Gasoline is in short supply. Using a war surplus engine designed to operate radio generators, Honda develops a small motorized bicycle. If gas is unavailable, the engine can run on pine tree resin. This is the world's first moped. It catches on all over the planet, especially in countries where large, loud, pricey motorcycles are not only impractical, but undesirable. With the huge financial success from his moped, Honda develops his first actual motorcycle models, the Dream, the Bentley, and the bike that will become the most produced motorized vehicle ever, the Super Cub. A 63 Harley Duoglide weighs 670 pounds. The Super Cub is a welterweight, a mere 200 pounds, but it's priced at an affordable $245. It has a top speed of 43 miles per hour and gets 200 miles per gallon. It also comes with a revolutionary electric starter, something that won't even be an option on Harley bikes for 2 more years, and even then, they'll be notoriously faulty. So, no more brutish kickstarting your bike. With the Honda, you simply push a button. Honda sets his sights on America, with headquarters in Los Angeles. His friend and colleague, Kiyoshiro Kawashima, is senior manager. Kawashima sits down with his boss to map out a strategy for how to capture the American market.
Kiyoshiro, may I offer you a sake?
Of course.
Honda is beloved by his employees. He's a warm, gregarious, and direct man with a wide grin. He also likes to party and regularly entertains guests with his homemade sake.
I want to hear your ideas for getting into the U.S. market, Kiyoshiro. Most Americans don't really want motorcycles. If we're going to change their attitudes, we need to change motorcycles' image.
Exactly. Forget the traditional dealerships. We'll get Honda in sporting goods stores, hardware stores, and hobby shops. Places average Americans trust.
Yes, I like that.
And advertising will be key, of course. Especially in magazines, ones like Life, Esquire, and Sports Illustrated that rarely feature motorcycle ads. That's our focus.
Excellent. More sake?
Domo arigato.
Honda spends a whopping $5 million on its U.S. advertising campaign, culminating with the brilliant slogan, "You meet the nicest people on a Honda." And it's everywhere, in print, on radio, and on television. In the ads, well-dressed, smiling people zip around on their Hondas. Dad takes off on one to go to work. Mom zooms to the supermarket on her Super Cub. And baby boomer teens get that heady sense of freedom when they hop on their Hondas to go, well, wherever they want to go. And when they get there, they can use their Japanese transistor radios to listen to the Beach Boys serenading Honda firmly into the pop culture zeitgeist with their hit, Little Honda.
Go!
Honda doesn't pay the trend-conscious Beach Boys to do this. They don't have to. The Honda name is so hot, another group calls themselves the Hondells.
I'm gonna wake you up early because I'm gonna take a ride with you.
They released the album Go Little Honda, featuring namesake songs like Honda Beach Party, Haulin' Honda, and A Guy Without Wheels, a sad number about a guy who apparently has no Honda. But Honda isn't the only one with people singing about it. Parisian bombshell Brigitte Bardot steams things up a bit for Harley.
Je n'ai besoin de personne en Harley Davidson. Je ne reconnais plus personne en Harley Davidson.
Which translates to this: I don't need anyone on Harley Davidson. I don't recognize anyone anymore on Harley Davidson. I press the starter, and this is how I leave the earth. I will go to heaven, maybe, but in a train from hell. Despite that plug from France, Harley Davidson is taking a serious beating from the Japanese invasion, something the suits in Milwaukee try to ignore. Triumph is too, but the company's brain trust are willing to investigate the situation. Johnson Motors in Pasadena, California, is the biggest Triumph dealership in the country. In the 1930s, it played a major role in cementing the UK brand in America. In 1961, company owner Bill Johnson sends a couple of his guys 3 hours south to San Diego to check out the Honda dealership there. They come back with wild tales of bikes selling by the truckload. The showroom is more like a supermarket than a motorcycle shop. Bikes are in lines of 50 of the same model, no less. No one in the state sells motorcycles like that. Johnson figures it's time to confront the competition face to face. He meets with Honda's sales manager, Hirobumi Nakamura, at his Pasadena Triumph headquarters.
Welcome, Mr. Nakamura. I really appreciate you dropping by.
The honor is all mine, Mr. Johnson. I am an admirer of Triumph motorcycles, and particularly your own import business. All of us at Honda are.
He's not just being polite. Honda's following Triumph's blueprint for getting into the American market. Like the UK company, Honda promotes its bikes as fun, wholesome, easy-to-ride machines. Honda's targeting non-Harley riders, and that's a lot of consumers.
Thank you very much, Mr. Nakamura. Let me ask you a direct question, if I may.
Of course.
Just how many bikes do you think you can sell here in the States?
We believe we can sell 5,000.
Triumph sells about 2,500 bikes a year out of its 19 dealerships in the West. Johnson smiles and nods.
5,000 motorcycles a year. That's a little unrealistic in my experience.
Nakamura doesn't bat an eye.
5,000 a year. You misunderstand, Mr. Johnson. I mean 5,000 a month.
Johnson is shocked, but it's not some empty boast. By the end of 1962, Honda is selling 40,000 bikes a year. Honda lightweight machines are the draw, but some customers still want bigger, heavier bikes, something Honda doesn't make. Yet, anyway. Harley isn't interested in their dealers selling their massive hogs next to the Japanese imports. Triumph dealers have a handshake agreement with the company to sell only Triumph bikes. But then, two things happen. A dealer files a complaint with a Federal Trade Commission, griping that showrooms are being forced to sell Triumph and Triumph alone. The FTC investigates but discovers it's technically not true. Various dealers have sold off-brand scooters and small numbers of BMW and Ducati bikes. Triumph is off the hook, but rattled. Then, one of the brand's biggest dealers, former racer Ed Kretz in Monterey Park, California, begins adding Hondas on his showroom floor. The move forces a policy change within the company. Non-exclusive franchise contracts are issued, and many Triumph dealerships begin carrying Honda. And Honda dealers start carrying Triumph as well. It's mutually beneficial. Triumph sells thousands of their larger bikes, thanks to dealership foot traffic attracted by Honda. A little Honda Cub for Mom and Junior, and Dad gets his Triumph Bonneville. In 1965, at Johnson Motors, Honda trade-ins on Triumph bikes make up a significant 8% of annual sales. For the time being, things are good for both parties. For Harley-Davidson, things are not good. Beyond Triumph and the Japanese bikes, Harley is competing with an international buffet of machines, including Vincent, Norton, Ducati, Moto Guzzi, Matchless, Bultaco, Osa, Zundapp, and BMW, all of them taking bites of the money pie. With only 6% of the domestic market, Harley sales figures are at $30 million, dwarfed by Honda at $77 million. Things are desperate in Milwaukee. Bill Davidson calls a meeting with his executive staff.
I'll cut to the chase, boys. As you all know, we're in deep financial trouble. I feel the best solution is to go public. We've been family-owned for 60 years.
And that's worked out well for us, boss. Look at Indian. They sold out and they've never been the same since.
That's true. But that's not going to happen here. Now look, our families can buy the majority of the shares, and we can put what we make from the remaining shares toward updating the factory and rolling out new bike models. Now, I think this is going to work.
The company goes public and uses the stock money to beef up the stalwart Duo Glide touring model. Harley adds a bigger gas tank to the machine and, taking a cue from Honda, an electric starter, renaming the bike the Electra Glide. Though it'll go on to become the company's most famous model, in its debut stage, there are serious problems. The electrical system adds an additional 75 pounds to an already heavy bike, and it shorts out in wet weather. But a bigger storm is about to hit Harley. President Bill Davidson's hatred for outlaw bikers and their attachment to Harley-Davidson machines is well known. He got slammed by the Hollister riots in 1947. Then 6 years later, Hollywood made The Wild One, a biker exploitation movie based on the Hollister incident featuring plenty of hog riders. What's coming down the road now is worse. Much worse. Thanks to the most notorious outlaw gang of them all, the Hell's Angels, and a young maverick author who chronicles their dirty deeds, their filthy ways, and their steadfast allegiance to Harley Davidson. To Bill Davidson's horror, this writer will graft the antisocial angels onto America's cultural map forever. We get support from Airbnb. Staying in an Airbnb is often one of my favorite parts of a trip, especially on business travel. Instead of slogging to another hotel and waiting in line after you've been driving or flying all day, there is nothing better than landing in a place that, well, really feels like a home away from home. Maybe you've stayed in an Airbnb before and thought to yourself, you know, this actually seems pretty doable. Maybe my place could be an Airbnb. Well, I'm here to tell you it could be. You could be sitting on an Airbnb and not even know it. It might be as simple as starting with your spare room, or maybe even your whole place when you're away. Say you and your family are headed away for a much-deserved spring break. Well, why not Airbnb your place and make some extra money towards the trip? Win-win. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. As business owners and managers, you use software for your business every day. You use one piece of software to manage your customers, another to manage your employees, another to manage your finances, and the list goes on. You buy these pieces independently and hope they fit neatly together like a puzzle. And then you find out the hard way that they don't, and you end up with a mess at the heart of your business operations. Does any of this sound familiar? Well, fortunately, Zoho offers a solution to this chaos. It's called Zoho One. Zoho One is a suite of around 50 pre-integrated business applications that fit together beautifully. So instead of dealing with disparate software from multiple vendors with multiple contracts and price points, you deal with one vendor with all the pieces of the business software puzzle neatly put together, offered at a very attractive price. Now, if this sounds interesting to you, you gotta check out Zoho One at zoho.one. That's ZOHO.ONE. With Zoho, you're not just licensing apps, you're licensing peace of mind. By 1965, the Hell's Angels had been around for almost two decades, since the club was founded by World War II veterans in Fontana, California. The swastika-wearing angels are proud one percenters, a term referring to the 1% of riders who allegedly make trouble. The remaining 99% are upstanding citizens. There are Hell's Angels charters up and down the Golden State, and the clubs in Oakland and San Francisco are part of the burgeoning Bay Area hippie scene. The Angels will rub shoulders with the most prominent names of the day, from the Beatles to Allen Ginsberg to the Grateful Dead. But law-abiding citizens are terrified when the long-haired angels, dressed in denim and leather, roar their Harley hogs down residential streets and break formation to zigzag between cars on the interstate. In 1964, the Angels make headlines in California when members are accused of sexually assaulting two girls aged 14 and 15 during a Labor Day weekend party on the Monterey Peninsula. The event sparks leading publications to do in-depth stories on the Outlaw Club. In 1965, the magazine The Nation hires a talented but virtually unknown journalist to write an article about the Hells Angels. His name is Hunter S. Thompson. Thompson's story is so sensational. He gets a book deal out of it, and he spends the next year riding, partying, and observing the Angels. They're open to it. They like attention. The clean-cut Thompson is far from being a thug or a hippie, but he does share certain basic interests with the Outlaw Club, namely riding big bikes. His choice is an English BSA 650. And he likes partying. His work results in the book Hell's Angels, The Strange and Terrible Saga of the Outlaw Motorcycle Gangs. Published in 1966, it's well received and it pulls no punches. There's a passage that's an ode to the Angels.
Listen for the roar of the Harleys. You'll hear it in the distance like thunder. And then, wafting in on the breeze, will come the scent of dried blood and human grease. The noise will grow louder and they will appear on the west horizon.
eyes bugged and bloodshot, foam on the lips, chewing some ruddy essence smuggled in from a foreign jungle. They will ravish your women, loot your liquor stores, and humiliate your mayor on a bench on the village square.
The next year, Thompson is on ABC TV discussing the Angels and their passion for Harley Hoggs.
What's the relationship between the motorcycle and the personality of the Hells Angels? Do you think there is one?
Well, obviously, yeah. It's like carrying a massive gun or bazooka around the streets. It gives them a tremendous sense of power and freedom, and it makes them very obvious. You can't ignore a Hell's Angel on one of his, what they call chopped hogs, booming up and down the street. The thing rattles windows and frightens pedestrians and that sort of thing. So without a motorcycle, he'd be just another punk.
In his book, Thompson dissects not only the Angels, but the Harley-Davidson Company and its failure to hang on to a market it dominated for decades. He draws an analogy to Ford. If it had been the only car maker in the country at the end of World War II, could the company have lost 90% of the market by 1965? It would be unthinkable. Yet that's where Harley ends up by the mid-60s. It's a family business, which is not always a good thing. Internal promotions are often based on having a last name that's either Harley or Davidson. Top executive positions aren't awarded based on ability, and the company suffers for it. The times are changing, but Harley isn't. They're still making big, heavy bikes. The company is slowly strangling itself. Cycle World magazine is the bike enthusiast's Bible. Motorcycle fanatic Joe Parkhurst founds the publication in 1962, and it quickly becomes the objective go-to source for all things in the bike world. In their Irvine, California offices, a rider stops Parkhurst in the hall.
Hey, Joe, you want me to review the new Harley electric line? Maybe take one for a road test?
Come on, why bother? There's so little change going on with Harley bikes, there's nothing new to review.
Right. And the cops and the Hells Angels don't read reviews anyway, I guess.
Yeah, that's right. And pretty much, who rides Harleys these days anyway?
By 1968, Harley-Davidson is looking into the abyss of bankruptcy. There's only one solution. Sell out. AMF, American Machine and Foundry Company, is their sole chance for survival. The massive recreational equipment conglomerate ponies up $21.6 million and takes control. Harley finds deliverance. The company's come a long way from the all-American dream and a tomato can carburetor. This sale allows family management to keep their jobs. But in the coming years, they'll all find themselves on a wild, freakish ride. On the next episode, Harley-Davidson motorcycles get serious Hollywood screen time thanks to an iconic film called Easy Rider. The Hells Angels keep their hog love hot, and Bill Davidson's son rises through the ranks to redefine the decrepit company. And unlike his dad, he digs choppers and the outlaws who ride them. Hey, Prime members, you can binge every episode of Business Wars ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey. From Wondery, this is Business Wars. Hope you enjoyed this episode. I'm your host, David Brown. Peter Gilstrap wrote this story. Karen Lowe is our senior producer and editor. Our editor and producer is Jenny Lauer Beckman. Sound designed by Bay Area Sound. Our executive producer is Marshall Louie. Created by Hernan Lopez for Wondery.
Welcome to the small town of Chinook, where faith runs deep and secrets run deeper. In this new thriller, available exclusively on Wondery Plus, Religion and crime collide when a gruesome murder rocks the isolated Montana community. Everyone is quick to point their fingers at a drug-addicted teenager, but local deputy Ruth Vogel isn't convinced. She suspects connections to a powerful religious group. Enter federal agent V.B. Loro, who has been investigating a local church for possible criminal activity. The pair form an unlikely partnership to catch the killer, unearthing secrets that leave Ruth torn between her duty to the law, her religious convictions, and her very own family. But something more sinister than murder is afoot, and someone is watching Ruth. With an all-star cast led by Emmy nominee Sanaa Lathan and Star Wars Kelly Marie Tran, Chinook is available exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.